family. Lasso has immense wealth of probably $500 million now in the U.S., stashed in trusts in South Dakota, also in real estate and shady properties in South Florida, a certain LLC structure that, you know, doesn't is not very transparent, but which is, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth. And we now see that these properties that he owns, even, you know, he owns an offshore bank in Panama as well, are in violation of Ecuadorian's law that prohibits government officials from having property in tax havens.
We have to leave it there. Andres Arauz, Ecuadorian politician and economist, and we'll post a Spanish interview at democracynow.org as well. I'm Amy Goodman. Thank you so much for joining us.
Running the time on the inside. Got just a few seconds left. Just a few seconds left. Strange people. People born just a little different than you and I. Are you ready?
Come join the Radio Lost and Found Sideshow Wagon as it rolls into your town. Radio Lost and Found is a two-hour media escape of found sounds, forgotten records, outre recordings, and more. Coming to you every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight right here on KBOO.
So, how much is that golden doodle or adorable Frenchie in the window? Probably a lot, especially in terms of suffering for its parents, who in many cases are living lives of misery in a puppy mill. On the next episode of Voices for the Animals, we'll be talking with Robert Hensley, senior counsel for the ASPCA, about their push to pass Goldie's Act, a bill now in Congress that would ensure better conditions and oversight for the hundreds of thousands of dogs now suffering at the hands of large-scale dog breeders.
The dog that Goldie's Act is named for was one of the dogs that lived in squalor and tragically was allowed to starved to death over several months while USDA inspectors observed her deteriorating condition, but did nothing to help her.
That's on the next Voices for the Animals, Friday, May 26th at 10 a.m. here on 90.7 KBOO FM. If you love animals, and especially dogs, don't miss it.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. Coming up now, it's your KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland passes a budget aimed at slowing population loss.
New legislation in Salem would expand food assistance to people who are undocumented.
And in international news, the European Union levies a major data privacy fine against Facebook.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, May 22nd, 2023. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Reed Johnson. The Portland City Council approved a $7.1 billion budget on Wednesday, which Mayor Wheeler hopes will stop the city's population loss. Wheeler stated he hopes to create a city which can, quote, entice people to come here, stay here, to invest here, to bring their employees back to the city of Portland, end quote. He cited a Portland State University population research study, which estimated the city lost nearly 5,000 residents from 2020 to 2022. U.S. Census data placed the number closer to 17,450. In general, Wheeler's demands to make the city more affordable translated into across-the-board cuts to Bureau's revenue sources. Budgetary changes at the meeting included a proposal from Commissioner Carmen Rubio to halt rate increases for public services related to parks, water, sewage, and transportation. Mingus Maps was the sole commissioner to vote no on the proposal. He said curbing fees would cost city bureaus millions in lost revenue and do little to give money back to residents. Bureaus which received additional funding included the Portland Police Bureau, which will receive an additional $5.3 million for new PPB positions and stolen vehicle recovery work. No new funding was allocated for Portland Street Response, however, this despite Portland's ongoing housing crisis. The 2023-2024 budget includes funds for implementation of the charter reform approved by Portland voters in 2022. The next step for the budget, review from the Tax Supervising and Conservation Commission. If it is approved, the council is expected to adopt the final budget on June 14th.
New legislation in Salem would expand food assistance to people who are undocumented. This assistance could provide a boost in rural areas where it can be hard to find resources that exist in the larger cities. Eric Tegedoff speaks with the Latino Community Association of Central Oregon to learn more.
Rural immigrant communities could benefit greatly from legislation known as Food for All Oregonians, anti-hunger groups say. Senate Bill 610 would eliminate an exclusion for people who are undocumented from receiving federal food aid through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Hilda Leon works with the Latino Community Association of Central Oregon in Madras and Redmond. She says food is expensive and there are few food pantries in the region.
Especially here in the rural area, we have less access than larger cities. So I know that our community will benefit greatly because they're struggling.
Senate Bill 610 would extend aid to lawful permanent residents, U.S. Compacts of Free Association citizens, and other Oregonians who arrived as immigrants or refugees. After the state's latest revenue projections exceeded expectations by nearly $2 billion, anti-hunger advocates say Oregon has the resources to make sure no one goes hungry. Leon says her personal experience as a single mother of four who struggled to feed her children also informs her push to get the Food for All Oregonians legislation passed.
A lot of times I had to make a decision, either pay my power bill or go get groceries. So that is a personal experience that nobody needs to go through just because you have no immigration status.
Leon says it can be especially hard to find culturally appropriate food in rural areas for Latino communities.
Food brings family together in family gatherings, and so getting this law passed, it will be easy for our families to access our own food from our own country.
More than 62,000 Oregonians currently are excluded from food assistance. This is the third installment in a four-part series on food assistance for people who are immigrants. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
It's been 3 weeks and Oregon State Senate Republicans still aren't back at work. Now a total of 10 state lawmakers will not be allowed to be reelected to the Oregon Senate. That's a part of Measure 113 that voters passed overwhelmingly in November. If any state lawmaker has more than 10 unexcused absences, they will be banned from seeking reelection. Republican lawmakers walked off the job to protest the priorities of the Democratic majority. They don't have enough support to change the legislation they object to, so they've been missing from the state capitol for 3 weeks. Without at least one more senator present, the state senate can't conduct any business because they don't have quorum. Two-thirds of senators have to be present in order for lawmakers to vote on bills. As of Thursday, state senators Tim Knopp, Lynn Findley, Bill Hansel, Kim Thatcher, Art Robinson, and Suzanne Weber have 10 absences and cannot run again. They join Daniel Bonham, Cedric Hayden, Dennis Linthicum, and independent Brian Boquist, who hit their 10-day mark earlier this week. Three Republican senators have fewer than 10 absences.
The bills that state Republicans want to keep from passing are protections for abortion and gender-affirming health care and gun safety regulations. They say their objections are about the readability of those measures, but Democrats have called them out for stalling on bills they just don't like. Democrats aren't ready to water down their commitment to including protection for gender-affirming care and abortions in their legislation. Senate Majority Leader Rob Wagner also indicated he won't excuse any of the unexcused absences to try to get Republicans back to session. It's the first legislative session since Measure 113 was passed, so it is new territory for how the law will play out. Republicans have indicated they intend to challenge the law in court. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek says she's staying out of the back and forth at the moment, but she says she would consider calling a special legislative session if lawmakers can't pass a budget by June 25th. That's when the session is scheduled to end. Kotek also didn't completely rule out sending state troopers after the missing Republicans. Kotek said, quote, "I'm not saying I wouldn't. I'm treating people with respect. Get back to work. I don't need to chase you down," end quote.
Washington State caregivers received a boost in pay in this year's legislative session. Lawmakers dedicated more than $760 million to at-home caregivers. Eric Tegedoff reports on the new budget funding.
Lawmakers guaranteed more than $760 million in their budget to boost wages and benefits for home care service providers. That means Washington state caregivers will get wage increases of at least 10%. Veronica Tussley is a caregiver for her mother, who traveled to Olympia with her union SEIU 775 to push for the wage increases. She says experienced at-home caregivers will earn more than $25 an hour by the end of their contract. And, importantly, caregiver wages will start at $21 an hour, helping recruit and retain them.
We've lost so many caregivers because of the fact that they can't afford to stay in that position and not get paid. So this is going to help us with the hiring process and getting people in, because we're in dire need of caregivers right now.
The Washington state budget also includes a rate increase for nursing homes of nearly $300 million over the next 2 years. Tussley says this is critical for addressing understaffing in nursing homes. Tussley quit her job to take care of her mom when she found out her mom had stage 4 cancer, which she survived. But Tussley continues to take care of her around the clock. While some might see this kind of care as a burden, Tussley disagrees.
This is my life as a caregiver, and I love the fact that I can be there with her through everything. I can say I was with her, and I held her hand through everything.
Tussley praised Puyallup Republican Representative Cindy Jacobson, whom Tussley met with during the session, for her work on this issue. Governor Jay Inslee signed the budget last week. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The European Union, or EU, hit social media giant Meta, formerly Facebook, with a record 1.3 billion euro privacy fine this morning. The EU also ordered the company to stop transferring personal information to the United States by October. The penalty is the biggest since the EU's strict data policy for privacy took effect 5 years ago. The previous record was 746 million euro fines levied on Amazon in 2021 for data protection violations. The decision applies to user data like names, email, IP addresses, messages, viewing history, geolocation data, and other information used for targeting online ads. The legal battle highlights differences between Europe's strict view on data privacy and a comparatively lax policy in the U.S., which lacks a federal privacy law. The EU long tried to rein in large tech firms by passing regulations that force them to police their platforms more strictly and to better protect users' personal information. Brussels and Washington signed a deal last year on a privacy shield that Meta could use, but the agreement is awaiting a decision from European officials on whether it adequately protects data privacy. Experts predict that Meta has no real chance of getting the decision overturned, and that even the new agreement might not fix the company's troubles. They say Meta will have to keep EU data in Europe unless surveillance laws are fixed in the U.S.
Meta recently warned that without a legal basis for data transfers, it will be forced to stop offering its products and services in Europe. But the social media company might have to carry out a costly and complex revamp of its operations if it has to stop shipping user data across the Atlantic. Meta has 21 data centers, three of them in the European nations of Denmark, Ireland, and Sweden. Other social media giants are also facing pressure over their data practices. Some feel TikTok, the short video sharing app, may pose potential cybersecurity risks. Meta said there will be no immediate disruption of Facebook in Europe. The company vowed to appeal and is asking courts to immediately put the decision on hold.
Debt ceiling talks stall while Biden attends the G7 summit. Florida college students feel trapped by increasingly restrictive laws. And the EPA's new power plant proposal faces backlash from critics. With more on those stories, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Now it's time for the other side to move from their extreme positions, because much of what they've already proposed is simply, quite frankly, unacceptable. And so let me be clear. I'm not going to agree to a deal that protects, for example, a $30 billion tax break for the oil industry.
At the G7 summit in Japan, President Joe Biden called for a bipartisan path and stalled debt ceiling talks with congressional Republicans. The White House has now put forward a proposal to reduce the debt by $1 trillion through spending cuts and new revenues. Speaker of the House Kevin McCarthy remains adamant behind a House Republican plan to make huge spending cuts, including in hunger programs, rail safety inspections, veterans aid, and clean energy investments. Activists across the country are protesting in defense of the safety net. Debbie Paul is with the Indivisible Massachusetts Coalition.
Negotiating on budget is done at budget time, not when it comes to raising the debt ceiling, because that applies to spending that has already been approved and monies that have been spent.
Students at the Progressive New College of Florida have been protesting daily, even organizing an alternative commencement after what they call a hostile takeover of the school by right-wing conservatives. Governor Ron DeSantis installed new leadership there, and he held a bill signing on campus for a ban on Florida colleges investing in diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Nisreen Kalai, a second-year student, feels the school is no longer a safe haven.
It makes it feel like inescapable, like even if I did go to another university in Florida, it's just going to be the same thing of, you know, diversity doesn't matter to us. That's the statement that they're making, is that we want this place to be, Florida, to be like a conservative playground.
The Environmental Protection Agency is now taking comments on a new plan to cut greenhouse pollution from power plants and faces backlash. Groups like the National Mining Association argue it would effectively shut down coal-fired plants. For their part, some environmental groups object that the fossil fuel plants could keep operating by using carbon capture. Rob Joyce with the Sierra Club's Wyoming chapter says that expensive, unproven, and energy-draining technology makes less sense than ramping up renewables.
It's been touted for a long time as a silver bullet to save coal and now to save natural gas even. But we have the technology that we need to get clean energy through wind and solar. And we're seeing that play out in some of our utilities plans.
New Hampshire's legislature voted down a bill requiring educators to inform parents, if asked, whether their children are exploring different gender identities or using a different name. Critics said it was a forced outing of students. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with 2 organizers from Bayan, Oregon about their upcoming events. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. And then at 7, Keeping Democracy Alive. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with an overnight low of 49 degrees. And tomorrow, cloudy with a daytime high of 67. Today in history, in 1954, Barbara Mae Cameron was born. She was a Native American artist and human rights activist in the field of gay and lesbian rights, women's rights, and Native American rights. She helped co-found the Gay American Indians in 1975, the first Gay American Indian Liberation Organization. And the quote of the day is from American aviation pioneer Orville Wright, who received a patent for his flying machine this day in 1906. Wright said, quote, "If we all worked on the assumption that what is accepted as true is really true, there would be little hope of advance."
$50 million will be made available to Alaska tribes through an Indigenous Animal Grant. The money comes from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and it's meant to support harvesting, processing, and packaging of traditional Indigenous meats like salmon, moose, and caribou. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez and National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new federal grant program has made up to $50 million available to tribes to support harvesting, processing, and packaging Indigenous meats like salmon, moose, and caribou in Alaska. As KDLG's Izzy Ross reports, tribes across the country can now apply for the funding.
Over the past 2 years, the federal government has worked with tribes to find ways to help support Indigenous food gathering traditions. Julia Anelica with the U.S. Department of Agriculture says the result of that process was the Indigenous Animals Harvesting and Meat Processing Grant.
It was really out of this consultation, especially as we were moving out of the pandemic and seeing the worries that a lot of tribes have for food security and food sovereignty, that informed this program.
The grant is part of the USDA's Indigenous Food Sovereignty Initiative, which began in 2021. The initiative works with organizations that serve tribes to get Indigenous perspectives on how to improve federal food programs. The grant doesn't set limits on the amount of money tribes can apply for, but there are a few restrictions, Projects must involve indigenous animals and meat processing activities and can't be used to buy land, meat, or animals. Still, Anelika says, the program is designed with tribal governments in mind.
There is just so much flexibility within this money. It can be something from like a four-wheeler to move animals to an entire distribution center. It really, really depends on what the tribe's needs are.
Grants are available for tribes across the country. And Anelika says there's a good chance tribes in Alaska could tap into a large portion of what's available. The mid-July deadline is in the middle of summer fishing and harvesting, already a busy time in Alaska.
It's unfortunate that the window falls during this time frame from now until July 19th, but this could be the only time. So I really, really encourage everybody who can apply for this to do so.
Anelika says anyone interested in applying should reach out with questions. I'm Izzy Ross.
Killers of the Flower Moon premiered over the weekend at the Cannes Film Festival. The film's directed by Martin Scorsese, based on a best-selling book about the Osage Nation and oil. In the 1920s, after oil is found on Osage land, Osage people are killed and the FBI investigates. The Osage News reports at the end of the film premiere in France, there was a 9-minute standing ovation from the audience for the director and actors, which include Lily Gladstone, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Robert De Niro. During a press conference at the film festival, chief of the Osage Nation, Jeffrey Standing Bear, says the tribe expressed they wanted to make sure they did not lose their voice in the story.
Early on, I asked Mr. Scorsese, how are you going to approach the story? And he said, I'm going to tell a story about trust on between Molly and Ernest, trust between the outside world and the Osage, and a betrayal of those trusts, deep betrayal. And my people suffered greatly, and to this day, to this very day, those effects are with us. But I can say on behalf of the Osage, Marty Scorsese and his team have restored trust.
Chief Standing Bear says Osage people were extras in the film and were behind the camera. They also made costumes, and the Osage language is featured in the film. Killers of the Flower Moon is scheduled to be released in theaters in October. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Grassroots groups are leading an effort to put an initiative before Colorado voters on the 2024 ballot that would phase out all oil and gas permits by 2030. The move is an effort to mitigate the climate and health impacts of fossil fuel extraction. Industry groups warn if the measure is passed, Colorado residents will face job losses and higher fuel prices. Eric Galatis has the details.
A coalition of grassroots groups are turning to Colorado voters in an effort to phase out all new oil and gas leases by 2030. Kate Christensen with Safe and Healthy Colorado says even after state lawmakers passed legislation mandating that oil and gas regulators prioritize the protection of public health and the environment, they continue to permit hundreds of wells, many right in the middle of highly populated areas already in violation of EPA ozone pollution limits.
And that is why we need a ballot initiative, because every other move hasn't got us the results that we need for our climate crisis and for our air quality and for our water. Nothing else has worked. We have to do this.
Leading global scientists have repeatedly warned that fossil fuels cannot continue to be extracted and burned if we are to avoid catastrophic climate change. The Colorado Oil and Gas Association says if voters approve the measure, there will be significant job losses and higher fuel prices. They argue even if permits stop, the demand for oil and gas won't. Christensen points to a recent report which found the oil and gas industry in Colorado contributes less than 1% of the state's total employment. And she says the industry's own research shows there are ample oil and gas reserves to meet future demand.
The International Energy Association, not a green group, just an energy group, came out with a report last year that said we have already extracted all the fossil fuels we need to extract. to make a transition to renewables by 2050.
Christensen says setting a timeline for phasing out drilling permits is critical for communities that are dependent on fossil fuels to build an exit strategy and get the support they need to transition to the new clean energy economy. If the coalition can collect 125,000 signatures to make the 2024 ballot, she says the effort could embolden people in other states.
There's only a few people who are really profiting off of this. Most of us are not seeing the benefits of oil and gas production. We're just getting the asthma. We're just getting the wildfires. What this could do is encourage other states to pass ballot initiatives along the same lines.
This is Eric Gladys reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott is expected to sign a bill passed last week to ban gender-affirming care for most minors. That puts health care out of reach for transgender youth in one of the largest states in the U.S. Texas is home to one of the largest trans communities in the country as well, including around 30,000 teens between the ages of 13 and 17. Opponents of the legislation say they plan to file a lawsuit, and Roz Brown has more.
The culture war over transgender identity is spreading in GOP-led states, and Texas is among those passing the harshest laws. The Human Rights Campaign says almost 30% of trans youth live in states that have passed bans on gender-affirming care. Last week, the Texas legislature passed Senate Bill 14, which essentially bans such care for kids under 18. Attorney Brian Klosterboer with the American Civil Liberties Union of Texas says the ban allows trans teens already receiving hormone therapy to temporarily continue, but requires that they wean themselves off the treatments.
We are preparing a lawsuit against SB 14, the bill that bans healthcare for transgender youth. We will be taking the state to court if Abbott signs that bill into law.
Some blue states are moving in the opposite direction from Texas, including neighboring Colorado, which passed its own legislation protecting people's access to reproductive health services and facilities. SB 14 was authored by Texas Republican Senator Donna Campbell, who argued youth under 18 who receive gender-affirming treatments may regret their decision at a later age. Meanwhile, the Texas House last week gave initial approval to SB 12, a bill originally aimed at restricting children from seeing drag performances, but as worded now, gives officials the power to target any performance. Klosterboer says the law is overly broad and censors free expression by threatening to ban and criminalize any performance that appeals to prurient interest in sex without defining that term.
And even though drag has been explicitly removed from the bill, the fact that the definitions are so expansive and that it comes with criminal penalties will have a major effect on free expression in our state.
Texas is home to one of the largest trans communities in the country, including an estimated 30,000 teens between ages 13 and 17. For Texas News Service, I'm Roz Brown.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, May 22nd, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Eric Teganoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, Eric Gladys, Roz Brown, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Reed Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our great members. If you would like to become one of these great members and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth, where Althea Billings will interview two organizers from Bayan, Oregon.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. At the end of July, the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, or APEC, Forum will be meeting in Seattle. Local organizations with a focus on international solidarity are kicking their organizing and education efforts into gear. I spoke with two organizers from Bayan, Oregon, to learn more about their work and upcoming events. To start, would you mind introducing yourselves?
Sure. So I'm Joseph. I am the regional coordinator for Bayan, Oregon, and also the deputy secretary general of Bayan USA.
And my name is Carolyn. I am a member of the Bayan, Oregon Regional Council, and I'm also a member of Onyx Bayan East Portland.
As we jump into this, could you tell the listeners at home, what is Bayan, Oregon? What does your work entail?
Good question. So Bayan stands for Bagong Aliansang Makabayan, which is the New Patriot Alliance. So we're an alliance of Filipino organizations. When we talk about Bayan, Oregon, we're focusing on just the four organizations that are here in Oregon. And we all have a focus on different particular groups, whether that's youth, women, or migrant workers. And the focus for us is really to how do we develop a Philippines where we have national liberation and national industrialization within our country. So that's really, that looks like so many things, but really focusing on how are we supporting our community here locally on the issues that they're struggling with on the day-to-day, but also how are we supporting, not just supporting, but also taking action around the issues that people in the Philippines are also struggling with as well.
So I understand your organization has two upcoming events towards the end of May. What can you tell me about those?
Yeah, I can start with the first one that's on May 24th. So this is an anti-APEC, or the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, anti-APEC and labor rights documentary screening and discussion that's put on by the Pacific Northwest People Over Profit Coalition, which Bayan, Oregon is a part of. And this will be an in-person screening and discussion.